she would leave without goodbye. Yes, sir. She wrote a line or two upon the wall. Said, I'm leaving you, no, I love you too. I can't stay with you. And to this very day, I can never say a discouraging word.
From San Francisco, California. This is Enemy Combatant Radio, and we have a most wonderful presentation for you this afternoon. We have LaMisha, and we have San Francisco Village Voice, so we're going to journey through the world of injustice and broken, fragmented societies and people trying to put it together. From San Francisco, California, my name is Fernando Vincent Ramos, and we're going to introduce Misha.
San Francisco Village Voice, sometimes it's even La Voz de San Pancho. When we have Latino guests today, unfortunately we don't have guests, and but people are welcome to call on the show. What is the number again, brother?
Our number here is 864-1006 and 415 area code, and please call, please.
864-1006. And there's a lot going on right now in San Francisco. But first of all, I just heard something that you just wrote, Brother Fernando, and I can't wait to hear it on the air. What is that about?
Oh, you mean the fact that I'm a poet first and I have a poem?
Uh-huh.
Well, then, okay, I have to ask everyone
and
to...
And this one is so hot.
Okay, I need everyone to sit down and hold on tight.
That's right.
Hold on tight, hold on tight. Grandmama's got a shotgun, she's walking down the street. Grandmama's got a shotgun, she's taking back the street. Grandmama's got a shotgun, she ain't taking no shit. Grandmama's got a shotgun, she's tired of her once beautiful baby Hunter's Point, tired of being treated like last year's trash. Grandmama's got a shotgun, she's taking it to the streets. And don't you know I heard her say? I heard her say here in the Bayview Hunters Point, the law is corrupt. The law is corrupt. The law's corrupt. And I'll tell you so, my grandmama's got a shotgun. She's putting the heat, the pretentious law, putting it all in its place. My grandmama, she's jump-starting the revolution. She's taking back the streets. She's putting the law in its place. It's grandmama justice now. Grandmama's got a shotgun. All I could say is watch out. She's taking it to the streets. Grandmama's got a shotgun. Grandmama's got a shotgun. She's reclaiming the streets. For LaMisha.
That's the truth, bro. Because grandma is about to get a shotgun in Bayview Hunters Point, the most criminalized neighborhood in San Francisco.
You say most criminalized, LaMisha, like something really happened to you recently. Did something happen in the Bayview Hunters Point that you need to tell, share with
just
us?
Just yesterday, I was on the bus to actually go to a support group for myself that is meant for grieving mothers, that is run by the critical intensive responsive team in Bayview at the Bayview Plaza by Kathy Hawkins O'Corey. And on my way to the support group, unfortunately, I pass by the Walgreens on 3rd and Williams, and I see 7 police cars, about 11 cops in the backyard with a German shepherd and 4 cops in the front. So I get off the bus, flip up my camera, and as I approach, staying at a respectable distance still.
You say a respectable distance, what is that?
Well, that's the legal distance so that they cannot arrest you for interfering with police business. That's 10 feet. So I make sure I stay 10 feet away. But I got a Zoom, so it's going to be cool. And one of the female officers, there were 7 police cars in the front blocking the street. And a police van, a white van, unmarked white van. And one of the female officers jumped out of the van. Can we curse on the air? No, I can say F, right?
You can say what you want, LaMisha.
Well, and she starts screaming at me, what the fuck you want to take pictures for? We're here to protect you. Go the fuck away. So I don't respond, and I keep shooting the pictures, right? And one of the officers come at me and say, you're going to be under arrest if you don't put that camera away. And I told them, well, I'm depressed. I'm a reporter for the San Francisco Bayview. I'm 10 feet away. And you know what you always have to say in those cases, I'm only exercising my constitutional right to observe. Those are legal terms. And once, if you have witnesses and you say that, they can't touch you. He didn't faze him. He lunged at me and he's in my face now saying, bitch, where are the 10 feet now? You're under arrest. So I happened to have in my backpack a picture that I was actually bringing to my office yesterday afternoon because I wanted to post it on top of the toilet. And it's a picture of me between the gleaming faces of Chief Heather Fong and Commander Porras at top brass of our police department in San Francisco at my infamous graduation from the San Francisco Police Academy citizen training last year. And I was thinking, I need to frame that picture, but where? And of course, I knew where I wanted to put that picture. So I flip it to him and because he says, show me your ID. You're going to be under arrest. So I flip the picture in his face and I say, that's my ID. And he looked at me and said, I don't know who the fuck those people are. So I said, oh, that's bad. You don't recognize your boss no more. Do you still want to see my ID? No, I don't want your ID. Get the fuck out of here. Cross the street now. And not in the middle of the street. Go to the crosswalk. So I stepped back to 10 feet. I didn't cross the street. But fortunately for me, I had witnesses across the street, brothers from the barbershop and customers at 2 jazz clubs, the Jewel and the Jazz Club is called, across the street were watching on. And then an 88-year-old store owner also at the corner, sitting in his chair and watching it all. So, but the 2 other officers actually, by that time when I kept shooting pictures, said, you should better get out of here. You're going to get killed. So I told him, what, crossfire? Because I knew that it was an armed robbery. I found out that much. And the guy was still up in that church called Epiphania at, I think it's 5128 3rd Street. And I saw the dude opening the blinds briefly and looking at the cops outside. So I knew that with that deployment of force, they were now planning to take him alive. And you know, the presence of the dog, the 11 officers in the back, the four in the front, all the police cars on the street. Obviously, he was not supposed to come out alive. And I made sure I stayed as long as I had to, shooting pictures slowly so that at least he would get a chance not to get out in a body bag. Mm-hmm. And after the incident, once he was out, I saw that, I must say to their honor, that when I saw them counsel the victim afterwards and be very respectful and very nice with us, which was good. But so I called immediately Sergeant Gittins, who is in charge of the police department public affairs, and I told him what happened, and I told him, Sergeant, you need to retrain your staff about proper code of conduct with the press. This was unacceptable. It was abusive. It was a very dangerous situation. If I didn't have witness, God knows what would have happened. My camera would have been crushed, and I could be dead. So he got very defensive and said, well, I wasn't there, so I have no way to assess whether or not you were interfering with police business. So I went to see the folk, the brothers and sisters across the street, and I say, can I interview you about what happened? And they were scared. They say, no, we didn't see nothing. So it's basically my word against theirs. And I'm still going to put an article in the paper, of course. I mean, that's my duty. That's what I do. And I'm going to file a complaint with the Office of Citizens Complaints. Brother Kevin Allen, the director, was here on our show last week.
Yes, he was.
And it's going to be unsustained because I cannot pull a witness. They're scared.
And the most important thing is just that things get logged in so that the second or third time,
right,
these things don't go unaddressed.
They were in a rage because they know, you know, a month ago I saw a kid being arrested for an open container on 3rd and Casada, so I flipped my cell and I started shooting a video. And one of those officers, a mousy little one that I never saw in my life, just look at me from across the street and go, hi, Misha, waving, how have you been? Do you know the suspect? I said, no, I sure don't know you. And I just kept shooting, but they wanted to make me look like a snitch. They can't stand that we're right there defending the neighborhood and people coming without appointment and a 24-hour crisis line. Actually, 2 months ago, there was a huge stakeout on Peru, and it was a domestic violence situation. And originally, they thought the guy inside had a gun, which he didn't. And there were two white negotiators at the corner, and guess what they had on the street? The tanks. The damn tanks, two tanks from riot control on parcel E from the shipyard. In other words, what they were doing is like, see, ladies and gentlemen, see what we got for you?
Yes.
Do you want to fuck with us? Because there was no need for tanks.
No.
And the stakeout lasted 11 hours. I actually slept at my office that night. I was on the street videotaping until 2 in the morning because that was the only way, again, to make sure that the person doesn't come out in the body bag.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's war. We know it.
Yes.
People have to realize when we say war abroad and war at home, it's not just like a pleasant euphemism.
Correct.
It's real. It's happening. I wonder if you have ever been negatively impacted by the police, Fernando.
Well, Misha, I'm gifted only because I know what the police are going to do before they do it. And any time I had any problems with the police, they did what I wanted them to do. And that
so you're on the lookout always.
Oh, always. It's just, you know, that out there, Misha, that's their territory. They took it from us a long time ago. They could do whatever they want. And you know, understand it's their territory. You got to always be watchful of them and know that if they don't follow A, B, and C, they'll never get to D. And you stop them from getting there. And sometimes they like to intimidate people, demoralize them and minimize them, marginalize them. They work for us.
But even if you're hypervigilant, I mean, if people could see you right now, you can't pass for white.
No.
You got long hair.
Yes.
And everything about you spell a brother who is intellectual and ready.
Yes.
So automatically, they're always on the lookout for you. They're always ready for you.
And I've been probably most lucky for the last 15 years. I stopped wearing bandanas.
Oh, yeah?
So
no colors, huh?
No colors. So I was like, oh, well. I have a young son. He says, oh, you can't wear that color. You can't wear that one. You can't wear that one.
You know about colors, something I wanted to Well, I remember last week, actually, during my son's anniversary of his murder by PD, we had some involvement with 14, with Norteños.
Yes.
When I was younger, you know, now they can't hold it against me because I'm retired.
Yes.
When you say grandma had a gun, I had a gun at some point. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I threw my last gun in the bay in 1997. The police knows it. But they can't do anything about it because that's the past, right? And, you know, there had been some hefty business at times. And 2 days after my son died at my home, and I see the OGs come in the low-riding cars, I thought, it's my turn. About some old stuff that I don't have to, you know. We all have skeletons in the closet. And I thought, okay, they're coming for me this time. And they knock on the door. And I open the door because, you know, there's no way. I mean, they're here, right?
Yes.
And instead of what I expected, those two men in their 60s, it's hard because, you know, it really got to my heart. They hugged me and say, Mama, we come to pay our respect. Idris was a good man. And that did more for me at the time than any excuses I got from my, you know, condolences from my government and whatever. I mean, that really touched my heart. Because the gang is the family.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? When your family has failed, that's your family. People only want to see the negative aspect of gangs. They don't understand that there is a code of conduct.
Correct.
And there are rules and there is respect. Yeah. Whew.
So the privilege of knowing and what the police are going to do also means that it's something we all have to understand and learn that that is their territory and they abuse their positions in power. And only when the people as a whole can get reconnected in a real unifying way where we, you know, I use the term slap them with logic. You know, the whole police dynamic needs to be slapped with logic so that, you know, we understand, they understand, we all understand customer service.
Yeah,
excuse me, please. You know, we rectify and understand that in England
we pay your salaries.
Yeah, we pay the salaries, and you know, there's some countries they don't carry guns. You know, they try to. They're so connected to their culture and their surroundings that it's like they know how to desensitize.
That's right.
You know, desensitize and understand that any of us now could be victims, just like the police could be victims. And, you know, I like to think that we're all trying to do a good job. And when those ones who mess it up for the particular people who care, you know, it's hard for us to trust, hard for us to believe.
It all depends on the political regimen. You know, I grew up under the dictatorship of Franco.
Yes.
At the time, the Guardia Civil, the civil guardians.
Yes.
Will hit you before they ask you for your papers, especially growing up Basque. We were pretty much used to that and we had to be hyper-vigilant all the time.
Yes.
Of course, they would hire, you know, undereducated cops from Andalusia, from the south, Marbella, Torremolinos, to come and beat some Basque ass, right? So, but afterwards, under Juan Carlos, there was a shift where actually the police was becoming your friend again. They would say, hey, Taiwan, I know your mama, what you're doing at the corner, or, you know, Pablo, it's time to go home, or let's go and shoot some baskets together. I'm off duty right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, of course, you know, with the whole war climate, not just here with Patriotic Act you know, Homeland Security, that mentality is becoming very prevalent again in many countries with law enforcement. But I remember, man, when as a young kid, when the nightclub back home opened until 6:30 in the morning, and the guardia would wait for us and beat us with sticks that were... how do you say, wrapped with wet cloths, before they would ask us for paper, our papers, if we don't get out soon enough. Because wet cloth on sticks don't bruise. It provokes very, you know, deep wounds, but it doesn't make any marks. And I remember at the time also, if a man had his shirt open down to the third button, the police would come and button up your shirt. We couldn't wear bikinis either. They would chase you in the hills, you know, in the dunes. So that was a big game at the time, is wear a bikini and start racing with the cops behind you. But, you know, there are countries where the police is your friend.
Yes.
There are countries where they hire people to police the village who lives in the village.
Correct.
Okay?
Correct.
And until we see that mentality being acceptable again, all we're going to see is more police killings. And that's just one aspect of the problem, of course, because the whole deal right now is that the police is really colluding with ways for an economy, and not just a local, but a global economy,
yes,
to get poor people of color out of palatable neighborhood. It's about the economy. It's about the oil. So without looking too grandiloquent here, it's about revolution.
And you said you used the word war. And so the opposite of war is revolution, to where we could start involving people, and being a woman of color to be able to speak up and say that. It's most important, because women are probably even bigger victims.
That's why I'm so happy to hear that grandmama finally got a shotgun.
Okay, yippee-yay. Yes.
Yeah, word.
And then for other people to understand, there's nothing wrong with saying there was a war, there's class war, race war. There's nothing wrong with saying that, but it's most important to know who's initiating it, where it's coming from. And the people that are responsible, they need to be held responsible. Yeah. And we start that first by knowing and identifying ourselves and how we're responsible. When we don't speak up, when we don't step forward, when we don't work to treat all people, all situations with some morals, ethics, and principles, and know that, you know, in that territory, it's ours to take back.
Yeah. You know what really worries me right now is that growing dissension between people of color who are activists and white liberals. And it has been growing for the past 2 years. Fortunately, there is some mending that is happening to black and brown unity right now with the support of white liberals. But what I mean by that, I've seen oftentimes folks that are working closely to us who are white liberals who say, let's do a protest on Third Street. And say, okay, what about people got in the crossfire?
Yeah.
Okay. We got riot control, heavy duty equipment, weaponry right there on parcel E. Guess who's going to be killed first? What about the brothers and sisters who have a warrant, who are just waiting for the bus, who are going to be caught and killed? Have you thought about that? And I hear, well, we're not afraid of anything. I say, do you have permission to decide who's going to be afraid and who's going to be killed? And that's the constant struggle that we have about, you know, between people who live in the trenches, won the siege, and people who have noble ideals and great intentions, but do not understand the down-to-earth reality of how it is to live under siege.
And the interesting thing is, understanding that is knowing that we have to be, all people have to be, 10 times more creative than these corruptors that are putting all these policies and positions together to be so creative that we now control the struggle. We control the revolution. And the liberals who are lost in thinking it's going to be some particular wonderful way, the real work is we have to do everything times 10 so that whatever they do against us, they won't take care of all 10. We will have enough policies and procedures, creativity, to where evolving the children in revolution times 10, so that every color child has some kind of vested interest. We lose our vested interest saying, oh, why should I be interested? Why should we be interested? The concept of peace and freedom is being stolen, not just from people of color, but from all people.
True.
Because they all live in their little shells.
Because everybody gets affected eventually.
Yes, they all eventually get affected.
There's a ripple effect.
Correct. And the fact that it may be hurting us first, there was one incident.
Well, we're always going to be on the front line when somebody's ass is going to be killed.
There was an incident I seen in San Francisco many years ago where this brown man was yelling at the top of his lungs on 7th and Market, you know, kill the black man, kill the black man.
Mm.
And I'm looking at him. I'm looking at his skin, looking at my skin, and I walk
to
up.
What's up with that, brother?
I walk up to him and says, oh, if they kill all the black people, who are they going to kill next? You know, he looks at his skin for a minute, kind of thought. And then he started yelling again. I said, well, I'm trying to, you know, hip you, brother, man. Because of all the different scenarios and dynamics.
But that's happening with self-hate and, you know, that's internalized oppression, too.
And, you know, the whole concept of being healthy means we all get healthy. We get healthy with health cares in every neighborhood, mental health around every corner, you know.
Yeah. With all the social workers back east who are sending mentally ill people to San Francisco with a one-way ticket.
Yes.
That's the concept of case management.
Yes.
Then they get here and the access system that is the clearinghouse for all mental health patients completely overloaded.
Correct.
And then
correct.
They end up on Skid Row on 6th Street.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so the concept of the war means that people have got to wake up, stand up, speak up, fight in any way they can. And in any way they can means they got to be more creative. They have to know that this is all our world, and with us all working up and standing up, some of us may fall, but the more stand up, the more have a chance to make an impact. And for LaMisha and Bayview Hunters Point area, people are frightened, people are scared, and it's like people who stand up are going to help reflect.
We have young people, though, who are not afraid, and that's what I feel so hopeful and excited about. Because us so far might not see the revolution. We can prepare the grounds.
Yes.
Maybe you will see it. Maybe I'll see it.
Correct.
But, I mean, the odds are that it's the young people now who are the driving force. And what I'm seeing right now is young kids, mostly young kids of color, a lot of females, 17, 18, 19 years old, saying the church has failed. I'm not counting on my church. I'm not counting on you. You're getting old. Thank you for teaching me. I'm ready now. Who do I talk to? Who do I hook up with? And what Idris Ali Foundation is doing right now is building youth coalitions between the mob truth movement, the gang truth movement. Some of the kids from Philadelphia who started the New Alliance of the Black Power Movement. Some local kids also were involved into just plain collaborative efforts among, you know, starting youth council advisory boards like Cassandra James, who is a youth commissioner for District 10, Sabrina Davidson, who is involved in the campaign to end the death penalty. Those young folks are not playing. They're saying, we are the knowledge. Do not patronize us. Watch our backs, but we know what we're doing. We're headed for the revolution. We're going to make this happen. Now, where it gets difficult, and we have to do a lot of self-searching about this, is that revolution always involves bloodshed. And it's not that we want it. It's like we cry wolf, and we tell city gov, watch it. You're dealing with a time bomb. And city gov is thinking, go ahead. Go ahead. We are ready for you. Some heads are going to roll because we want your neighborhood. So a lot of, especially older folks like me, we think we can't get things started because some heads are going to roll. And I'm going to be responsible for that. But guess what? It's really not a choice. Because if we don't get involved in the mob truce, if we don't organize and join, you know, those driving forces together, the heads are rolling anyhow.
Yes.
Look at Craig Holden, who died in a police precinct back in October in Bayview, 21 years old black male, because they took his asthma medicine away from him and left him to die choking for air on a bench. Look at Asa Sullivan, in a 2.5 crawling space, holding an eyeglass case, who was shot to the eye and to the head and 4 more bullets. And they claimed that he was aiming at them. I mean, those lives are gone. Yes. If we sit and say, that's too bad, I shouldn't do funerals no more, I can't take it. Let's pray God, the big lottery in the sky, to make sure that at least we have a better word on the other side, that don't cut it.
No.
I mean, and there is such a thing as complicity by silence. Silence kills. If we remain silent and do not organize, we are actually accomplice of the institution that is promoting the murders.
Correct.
So there's no choice. There is always bloodshed anyhow. And it's hard. And it's hard because when you take that responsibility, you don't have no need to take guilt. Guilt don't help nobody. We have to take responsibility. And what we can do is organize the youth and watch their back as much as we can. Ha!
Well, the...
It's deep.
The important issues need to be raised and looked at and touched and be brought close to people. And someone reflecting on creativity, you know, anything that changes the way people think or feel is going to be discouraged, if not violently opposed. And right now, the war that's happening in the Bayview Hunters Point is the people there have to understand that that's their land, that's their homes, that's their land. And that war of being chased away from your home, you know, there have been a lot of places that the same things are happening. And people just say, oh, well, there's got to come a point to where these older people, these younger people, and everyone in between need to be therapeutically and creatively introduced to learn how to take it to the streets, to stand up.
Unfortunately, you know, I think that we talked about that last week. It's like during the last elections in San Francisco, only 28% people
yes.
vote. That's why, you know, Prop A, that was going to allocate $10 million towards reducing the homicide situation and community policing as well, was defeated only by 1% because only 28% of people vote. I know in my neighborhood, a lot of the kids, you know, 18 and up, say, I ain't going to vote. It's all corrupt. I don't trust the Republican, the Democrats. I don't trust the Green. I definitely don't trust the Libertarians. Why should I vote? It's a joke. But by not voting, what the kids don't understand is that by not voting, yeah. they contribute to the silence that kills.
They do.
And so that's, you know, that's the only way to change the world. It's like vote and hit the pocket of the poverty pimps. We need to hit their pocket. We need to do lawsuits. I'm organizing right now to create a fund towards a class action lawsuit in San Francisco against PD and the city for racial profiling mm-hmm. with all the police killings that we have sustained for the past 13 years since Aaron Williams.
Yes.
And family, it doesn't matter if people settle, lost, or won their case. With a similar profile around racial profiling, we can refile again, even without any new evidence. Of course, that costs, like, we're talking about probably like $10 million.
Yes.
So, but unless we say, oh, well, it's too much money, nobody got money, there are forces that we can mobilize. We can mobilize the NAACP. You know, they're fossilized. It's time to revive them a little bit. Give them an injection of kryptonite or some
yeah.
shit. And forces like, you know, that African-American Community Policing Board.
Yes.
The Black Power Movement that is revived, the Rainbow Push, although they sure have some kind of a model agenda right now. Mr. Sharpton, that hasn't done much lately.
No.
Hey, Al, what have you done for me lately? So we have means, and there is ways to revive the voice.
Yes. And, you know, one of the many outside suggestions that are necessary and important is, you know, after the immigration rights, it was that one-day boycott that scared these people.
Right.
And the same dynamic of the boycotts to be more creative and attack
boycotts
the system.
Boycotts are a mother, okay? That works.
Yeah,
remember the civil rights movement?
Correct.
Remember the bus boycott?
And it was based on all the vested interest. We all have
right.
a vested interest in this. All have a vested interest in figuring out the same dynamic to boycott the systems as a whole.
Right.
And it's the work of us all to figure out how can we do this, because that's the work times 10. We got to work 10 times more to find that one thing.
Boycotts are wonderful, man.
Yes.
You know, I'm actually getting a little flag because I'm defending a cop in Atlanta right now. I found out on the internet that this black cop arrested a white female who spit at him and dislocated his shoulder.
Well, her spit must be pretty strong.
She was strong. And the guy was just trying to restrain her. I mean, there were like 5 different felonies at the time when it happened. You know, I usually don't root for cops. Mm-hmm. But because of political pressure on the mayor, they put him to pasture. And I set up a petition. Because, see, there was another scenario a year before where a white cop was scratched by a black female. He took one of her eyes out. And a year later, he killed another kid, another black kid who was 17-year-old, never got indicted and got promoted. But Officer Terrence Alexander, who put his knee on her back after she dislocated his shoulder, got fired from the police department. So I actually set up a petition online for the dude. And he has like 15 commendations from citizens, from, you know, being pretty much a good cop.
Yeah.
And one from the mayor's office before. So I set up a petition online. It was very slow at first. Then I wrote a letter to the International Black and Brown Community saying, do not visit Atlanta until Mayor Franklin does the right thing. And they started sending letters saying, you know what? We don't want to go to Atlanta. I'm not going to send my kids to Moorhead or Clark University in Atlanta. So now they're starting to feel nervous because that's it. Boycotts are powerful.
Yes.
You get results.
And it's like you said, it messes with their money. And they're going to gonna pay a little more attention.
I don't know if I ever told you because, you know, I have PTSD, so I tend to ramble at times, but when Mayor Brown refused to ratify a 40-hour mandatory training for SFPD, that was actually spun through my son's case after he was killed by PD. He refused to ratify it. It was $170,000 on the budget for the city. And at the time, I was born on the French side of the Basque Country, and I belong to an organization that is called Communist French Citizen in Foreign Countries. So I thought, let's see, when you talk about being creative, I wrote every embassy, French embassy in the world. A week later, 27 consulates of the world were writing to Willie Brown saying, you're bidding for the Olympic Games in San Francisco? We're not going to come to the Games unless you ratify this training. 2 weeks later, Mayor Brown ratified the training. Hit the pockets. Yes. Boycotts are wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. Ah, a little silence here.
Yes, it is.
Seizing brains. I ain't got a shotgun, but we're ready.
Okay.
We're ready. There's a time where we have to take the law and order in our own hands.
Yes. Because there really is none. I mean, it's just all the problems we have in San Francisco, they're unique to San Francisco, but we have to multiply that by 1,000 and look at our country, our North American country, and the corruption and the racism and the sexism is most overwhelming. And for people who are committed, it's just a large task, and a large task that becomes smaller when more people get involved.
So are you a feminist, brother Fernando?
Well, I have to disappoint you. I'm not. I'm not a feminist. I'm a super feminist.
Hey.
So I understand and believe that men as a whole, for 10,000 years, male dominated sexist ideology has trampled on every woman. There's a statute of limitations on murder. And for the very first murder on a woman by a man, that has to be accounted for. The science of man and his thinkology has not made amends to women at all. For 10,000 years, in being a super feminist, men as a whole have to make amends to the science of womanhood so that women can write the science of womanhood. We don't know the unifying interest of all women. All women are fragmented and broken up. As a super feminist, women, this is half your world. Us men, warped, disturbed, criminal, evil, corrupt, you know, our thinkology, our philosophies make us all live in boxes. If women built homes for the last 10,000 years, we would not be living in a box.
Do you know what they call a dyke? A dyke? It's from the Celtic culture.
Celtic?
Women who were masculine looking, disobedient, or defiant, will be drowned, and they will pile the bodies to make this bridge from that village to the other. That's why a dyke is called a dyke.
So the complete warped history of male sexist dominated ideology says we must make amends to this so that we, men, our stench does not follow women around one day longer than it has to. That's when we work on putting sexism into extinction. We have two revolutions at once. Men don't have to do this. Women never have to accept this. Here at this day, at this time, women are bought and sold into marriage.
An excision that 70% of African women are being excised.
And in all this, it's done by man. Warped perspective of man, his power, his control. And as a human being, a father, an artist, a social scientist, men have got to come to terms with how our whole history is in a de facto marriage with corruption and evil behavior. Evil times 10,000 years. And 10,000 years of women not being heard, not being listened to. So that when I wrote Grandmama's Got a Gun, women have got to know that they have a right to stand up. And in a hypothetical way, I know a lot of people don't like this or understand this, Lamisha, but if every little girl child was taught how to shoot a gun at 4 years old, you know, and every girl child could, because, you know, even though the right to bear arms means we roll up our sleeves and go to work, if every girl child had the right to shoot a gun, knowing that she can do that, men in that odd warped kind of way, ooh, I better treat these women a little different. But that's in a few more generations of knowing that women have the right to bear arms, roll their sleeves up to go to work, or let a man know, you cannot touch me. So in the concept of being a super feminist, to give power to women so that they, I let them know this is half of their world, not controlled how our paycheck, our homes, our car, but the whole world, as if, hey, you build this. Your science, you're the science of womanhood. All this is a science of man. Square boxes come from man, a squareness, the piston engine, man. Mm. We do not know the thinkology of women. So that's why in my understanding, my work, the science of womanhood is something that has not been written. And if it could be written, then us men will be slapped in the face, socked in the face with logic.
Wow.
It's called wisdom born of pain. You women got a gang of it.
Ooh! You got amen, hermano. I mean, a woman, brother.
And so in being a super feminist is to reflect that morally, ethically, and principally, this is what men, all men, when they grow up, this is what they have to do. This thinkology comes from the guerrillaism dynamic. The guerrillaism formulated by George Lester Jackson. You take the logical conclusion of all his work, like a few other people that I'll speak of, guerrillaisms in all things, not just in civil strife, but a guerrilla parent, a guerrilla teacher, a guerrilla worker. And all that means is you're on top of it. You're on
top of it. We are not all responsible for it. Look at sexual and socialization. It starts before birth. We as women in pregnancy address our child inside in a very different way if we think it's male or female. When the child is just born, we even cood. The way that our tone of voice is directed towards the female child or the male child is different. The colors that we surround the child with, you know, like bright blue or red for a boy and the pinks, and the yellows for the girl. We know the effect of colors on sex roles and socialization.
Yes.
The toys that we, that, you know, when I was a little girl, I was, you know, I knew I was different. I didn't know I was a dyke at the time. But they would buy me those dolls. And I would dress them up like a high dominatrix and put needles into them because I couldn't stand dolls. I like my bow and arrows best.
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing. It's like we're responsible also by the feminization and passiveness. And another thing that always make me laugh but also irritate me is there's not another day. It doesn't matter if you're a young girl or a grandmother. I haven't walk a street one day without a man with the best of intentions telling me, come on, smile. Can't be that bad. And I do not respond anymore. But it really means, even with the best of intentions, like you cannot walk around internally preoccupied as a female or angry as a female. That is not your world in the world. Imagine for a minute, Brother Fernando, that as a woman, I would be on a bus on the street and approach a male and say, come on, put a little smile on that face, you motherfucker, it can't be that bad.
Yeah.
And they would probably think that I'm schizophrenic,
yeah,
right?
Totally shit.
But a male out. Patriarch, whatever shape or form, yeah. It could be a young student, it could be a veteran,
yeah,
it could be a businessman, he's completely entitled to tell any female any day on the street,
correct.
Come on, smile, it can't be that bad.
And, so,
and I've used that actually in, you know, like, workshop against homophobia, sexism, etc. And a lot of the feminist men were like flabbergasted. Oh shit, I've done that.
And see, that's some of what
I. That's the way you socialize.
And that's where I identify the historicalness of the stench of man. It comes out in all these unique, you know.
It's very subversive and very unconscious at times.
And in being grown up, in what I also say, using 95% of your brain power.
Yeah,
you know, actually going out to use
we
that.
We don't
brain.
Use that much, actually.
No,
we use
10%. And that's what I mean. Going out to use so much to where, in really making revolution within ourselves, we use all that energy to really think and concentrate and constructively.
Are you saying that revolution starts at home?
It starts right in the heart,
right in the soul,
and in getting it to know and own the role of being grown up. Because that's what we all need. We all need to grow. These young children, 12, 13 years old, what do they say? I'm grown up. You know, to be grown up means that we can have morals, ethics, and principles, as I said before. And it's connected with the
loyalty,
style, class, grace, finesse. And that extra adhesive is love. And the byproducts of all those is trust and respect.
Mm-hmm.
Trust and respect. Because we never understand trust. We never understand respect. We never know the truth. But if we have an adhesive called love, connecting all these other dynamics together, we get truth. We get truth. And that's where we connect our broken communities. We understand the truth. Where is our style? Where is our class? Where is our finesse?
What would you say are the concrete steps that people can take? Because a lot of, we might be preaching the choir right now.
Correct.
It's like, we all know that. We can all bitch about what's wrong. We're good at that. Because we are astute, we can see it. What are, a lot of people say, well, this is too big for me. So, you know what?
Well,
I'll just kick back and look at you all, how you're doing. And if it works, I'll join. So, what is it that people can do? You say revolution starts from the heart, at home.
Using
what can you do on a practical, concrete basis?
Actually, using
big or small?
Very small. I work from what's known as the art and science of simplicity. You know, you had a function a couple weeks ago at your home, and there were many people there. That needs to be happening, not necessarily in your home, but in all communities, so that all these communities have an organ to connect together, to find all the different things that are similar and
connect them.
So restore
the village, right?
Restore the village with those people who want to say, we got to do something, we got to take it. This is how we're going to do this now. This is how we're going to do this, because all these other things are not working. They are working against us. They cannot come and attack a party when it's just a party.
Right.
They cannot attack a barbecue when it's just a barbecue, even though they may. So first of all, simplicity, slow everything down. Don't use their clock. Use the clock in our
heart. Your internal clock.
Use our clocks to slow everything down and say, all we're doing is now knowing you, knowing you, knowing you, knowing all those people in your community, do the work to know those people.
See, what we need to do, I think, also is to reconnect with, we know that life started in Africa, right, before the continent started spreading. But it's like, I lived in Africa for 3 years as a young woman in a communist organization called Volunteer of the Progress. And what I found out for the first time is a culture where us is bigger than I.
Yes.
I cannot exist without us. Us doesn't exist without I. But the collective in consciousness and the mentality of the village is the rule that makes the I. Here we talk self-assertiveness. You know, it always made me laugh because when I first came to this country and I was told about self-assertion, it's like, you have to learn to say no. Don't say, excuse me, because I can't say no, I don't want to. You don't have to explain yourself. I was thinking, gee, if I went back to my homies, and my old folks at home, and they would say, no, I don't want to. I would say, are you crazy? Don't you know you're supposed to say, excuse me, but I can't. So, but that's very typical of the individualistic American culture.
And so,
I, then the nuclear family, and then the village and the collective good, if there's any room in your heart left for it.
And in the art and science of simplicity, you started opening up for me when you said us, in looking at the revolution and applying it, looking at new ideas, new concepts, we have to reinvent what we, what our, what us is and means. We reinvent we, our, us. So that in a conscious way, in our workplaces, in our families, in our communities, this is what we, us, ours is. This is all
it exists,
ours.
But those are pockets.
Yes.
If you go to the Tenderloin,
correct.
The Design Franchise Homeless Committee know what us means.
No,
some of them do. You disagree. If we go to La Mission, there is differences between 25th and 14th. Yeah. But block to block, people know each other. And the gossip is strong, but some people watch for each other. Yeah. In Bayview, people tell me, you're crazy. Your office is in the most dangerous corner of the city. You know, the worst that happened to me, 2 a.m, I go home sometimes. Mm-hmm. Big OGs that come at me and say, come on, mama, give me a hug and stay strong. We know each other. We watch out for each other.
Yes.
The corporate press and the local government choose to depict us under only one angle, black on black crimes. They refuse to acknowledge that there is a sense of us.
Correct.
Of course, it's fragmented because, you know, I don't know if you heard of a woman called Dorinda Moreno, who is a Chicana leader in LA, at Action LA. And we're actually planning a Chicana commemoration this summer here in San Francisco together. And Dorinda and I were thinking about doing what might or might not be called an integrity workshop. Because a lot of us have been so tired to being exploited by white folks. And they pick your brain and then they produce this essay for their, you know, PhD paper with your ideas, right? Those kind of things. And that some of us decided to take financial matters in their own hand and run astray. And have, you know, charges of embezzlement. And for us to have a workshop that remained private and confidential among all of us who didn't sell out and some of the people who sold out and have some questions and re-embrace each other and start anew. Because, you know, unfortunately, the slave masters are still well and alive in 2001. And there is still a lot of people who have sold out, not understanding within people of color that you will be used and discarded just as quick.
And one of the reflections that I made in being super feminist, the more power that we give to women, let women have on their own, can shake the cage of us all so that we're able to allow some freedom that freedom has never been received before. The stench of man is free from women in trying to do whatever we can do. It's implant these seeds of thoughts, of ideas that have to, sometime when we do grow up, be presented. And sexism and racism are the two most major concerns, whether we have all these other, you know, inner community
concerns.
They're
actually linked because they dogs and then the dogs, you know, with sex.
So that in understanding sexism and racism and the people who wish it, it's one of the means for us to be even more creative to figure out how we can draw people together in light of people not wanting that. And it's just, as an artist and a scientist, it's what I guess I live for it, because we have to think, we have to think, we have to think, we have to have these young children now use as much of their brain as they can. We have to try not to give them any sugar until a certain age. We have to try to keep their attention on us rather than on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to let them be children.
Reading material.
They have to be children for as long as they can be children.
Yeah.
So that someone who's 5 years old is 5 years old. Someone who's 8 years old is 8 years old. Someone who's 12 years old is 12 years old. Because we know, we keep saying we want to hurry up and grow up, but that growing up just goes way too fast.
You got kids, Fernando?
I have one son, yes.
How old is he?
Actually, he's a young man. He's 25.
Wow.
And so in understanding
Does he live here in the Bay Area?
No, he actually lives in San Francisco, yes. He's here. Cool. He's here with me.
Cool.
And he's in maintaining our real control of ourselves and our families. It's, you know, we have to enjoy the time that we have. We have to be as morally, ethically, and principled as we can.
As present. Remember that that song by Los Tigres del Norte about the absent father.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in being whole and being real, there's a lot of work we got to do. This is our society's, you know, I look at it from the bleakest point so that we know we have a lot of work to do. There's a lot of people, they have open gaping wounds, and that's from our society, open gaping wounds, and they throw salt on it. The people in the streets, the people who are hurt and who are psychiatrically, medically hurt, it's the whole world is in need of help, and that's why I always ask people to, when they go into their bathroom mirror, clean that mirror really well, and then look real close in there, in that person, and find a hero down in there. And get that hero and pull that hero out.
Mm.
Because that hero could...
And in your children, too, avoid that. It's important to be firm.
Yes.
But your child is a hero.
Yes.
Your child is fighting odds and confusion and challenges in school and on the street. And there's a beautiful, powerful force in that child.
And we all have responsibility. And right. That's probably the first thing, the new art and science of all the art and sciences that I identify with. The art and science of responsibility.
Mm.
We know we have political and corporate leaders who are not responsible at all.
Right.
And they destroy and waste
because human life is expendable, it's not important.
Correct.
Remember the guy who conducted the Tuskegee experiment?
Yes.
I saw him actually on primetime TV say, "So what? I could have killed 50,000 hillbillies. I chose the niggers. So what? Same difference."
Yeah.
And for him, those are just numbers. Yeah. Expendable lives, subhuman lives.
And it's sad because he learned that somewhere. He learned that. He applied that and
people... Never got indicted.
Never got indicted. So, I mean, the concept of justice is, again, something has to be reinvented. I use the term reinventing. Yeah. Things have to be reinvented, just like our communities have to be reinvented.
And look at the judge who actually applied the death sentence to Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Yes.
Who said, his secretary reported him, they'll say, "We're going to fight that nigga."
Yeah.
Is he indicted?
Not as of today.
Actually, I think it's on July 5th, Kevin Cooper is going to call live.
Yes.
At our Bayview campaign to end the death penalty meeting.
Okay.
So that's going to be at 7 p.m. on July 5th. Since we're on announcements, I also want to let folks know that on Idris Telly's birthday, my son was killed by the police, which is August 20th, we're going to have a huge cookout in Candlestick Point. I'm not saying Monster Park, okay? There ain't no monsters in Bayview. Candlestick Point. And that's going to be a joint event, a benefit for Justice for Asa Sullivan and for the Bayview campaign to end the death penalty. So we're going to have a lot of fun. It's actually organized by Rob for Rights, my godchild, who is now touring the nation with positive lyrics as Brother Hectic, who was on our show 2 weeks ago. And also I wanted to make a humble pitch for our agency. Idris Telly Foundation might be forced to close its door in about 2 months from now because we are still filing for our nonprofit federal status 501c3, but we cannot get grants or accept or get tax deductible donations until that happen, and it's a long process. Idris Telly Foundation has been alive to the settlement that I got from City and County of San Francisco in 2003. Now the money's gone because I've done a lot of coalition buildings, Bank for Change, for example, in front of City Hall, the Civil Rights Revival Festival on February 25th cost ISF $12,000. So event after event, the money's gone now. And we can no longer pay DSL, PG&E, etc. So You know, we can continue doing work on the internet. We can maintain the crisis line. But we are the only watchdog right now in San Francisco. And the clients completely rely on us, not just for information and resources, but to help them build their website, to be there for a support group, for one-on-one counseling. That's the extended family. No appointment needed. So for the clients, it's a small disaster. Well, a big disaster, actually, if we don't remain open. So I'm not appealing to your pocket here, but anything big or small is cool, including for your heart or coming to volunteer or do an internship for Idris Telly Foundation. You can call us on the crisis line at 415-595-8251. That's 595-8251.
So why don't we go to a little bit of music, Misha, and we'll be right back.
All right. We're swinging it. Ringing it.
One of a kind, love affair is the kind of love that you read about in a fairy tale. Like the sun that shines on a rainy day, it's a cloud of love. One of a kind, love affair. Up, when your up is down, but love stays around. And when you know you're right, but you got to make a little sacrifice, you make it for love. Whoa, yeah. I never thought about the day would come when she would leave without goodbye. Yes, sir. A discouraging word, cause I love you. Whoa, yes, sir, love a fairy. When you hate to say, girl, I told you so, but you gotta go. There won't be a fight, cause your love is right, but you're leaving wrong, wrong, wrong.
Okay, we're back with LaMisha. My name is Fernando Vince Ramos. This is the San Francisco Village Voice, LaMisha.
Yeah, we were just kicking it right now, you know, with our creative minds. And I was just reminiscing of the time where I was working with people with Down syndrome. And I remember this young sister, probably like 28 years old, who wanted to be pregnant. and she was married to a man who had Down syndrome. They were both pretty high function, probably an IQ of between 80 and 90. They were both working, and they were extremely angry, saying, you know what? To us, who are normal, I have a psychic connection with my husband. We don't need words. We can look at each other. Sometimes we're not at the same place at the same time. He's home, I'm on the bus, and I can feel what he's telling me in my mind and my heart. You normies don't have that. And we are beautiful. You normies are ugly and too tall. We live a short life. We live a rich life. How dare you tell me I cannot have a baby that looks like my beautiful husband and looks like me? And I was thinking, dang, you got a point right there. Who are we to decide that people who may be very functional, who are different from us, do not have that beauty in their heart and don't have that beauty among each other? I mean, you know, and that goes for every marginalized people in the world.
Correct.
I remember this young transgender woman that I met while she was dying on the in intensive care at San Francisco General Hospital. Estrella was, I think, 18 or 19 years old. And I saw the other transgender girls, all Cuban, who were coming, you know, from the Tenderloin to watch her, to watch over her. And I was trying, I could see from the way they dressed that they were working in the sex industry. So I was trying to talk to her, to them about precautions and, you know, around condoms and AIDS. And they were like paying me lip service and rolling their eyes. And at some point when we had more trust because I speak the language and we're starting to have more of an extended family relation, they told me in Spanish, one of them told me straight up, say, you don't understand. Estrella is dying in a warm, clean bed. Okay, she's lucky. I work on Main Street. I suck a dick for $2. I'm probably going to be strangled before I reach 21. I wish I had AIDS like her and sleep in a warm bed. And that really blew my mind. And I earned a new respect about what is the norm? What is precaution? What is the reality of the world? Think of the transgender Brazilian girls in the favelas who know that they're infected and cover their skin with radium powder to glow in the dark and be an idol, to be like a goddess one night. That's their reality. It's crazy to us. That's the reality of extreme poverty and disenfranchisement. I can't even say that. Disenfranchisement? English is such a hard language,
yes,
man.
Yes, it is.
I'm still struggling with that. But that's the, there are so many facets of reality. Who are we to judge?
Yes.
Who are we to judge when LaShawn Harris threw her babies in the bay back in October?
Yes.
The schizophrenic woman who have begged for years to be released of the custody of her children, who hear voices telling her, God is claiming the babies. Throw them in the bay. Who are we to judge her? While a white man watch her, disrobe the babies and throw them in the water one after the other and walk away because he is scared. Maybe that's another judgment, see?
Yes.
I mean, we breathe, we judge, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
It's so big. And I can understand when people say, well, you know what? I'm just going to watch all of you go crazy for a minute. Sometimes I think, I don't want reincarnation. I want to be a crystal in a mountain and watch all of you go nuts for the next 200 million years. But it don't work like that.
No, and actually, I wish we had. I wish we had 200 million years. But actually, we have 9,950 years because that's how long it's going to take for all this uranium poisoning to seep through the earth. We have 9,950 years to find an answer to that dynamic because that stuff will be eaten through everything in that specific amount of time. We've had that poison for...
It's hungry now.
Yeah, it's hungry now. And the problems outside of racism and sexism, you know, we have all these small problems, but intellectually, scientifically, and therapeutically, we got to figure out how to have healthy children, healthy people, so that we could find answers to these problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's some child out there, somewhere, someplace, who's going to add to the dynamics that simplifies this madness that we call life. There's going to be some child, some person out there who could figure out what to do with nuclear waste. There's going to be some child, some person, maybe they exist now, who could figure out how to deal with sexism.
How to cure AIDS.
How to cure AIDS. How to be constructive in enlightening and share enlightenment so that, you know, all the concerns we have can, within the allotted time allotted to us, can figure it out. Because if, you know, we wait around from the same time from the pyramids until now, that's 10,000 years.
Mm.
You know, that's how fast.
That's a very small window, actually.
That's very small. And understanding how quick time goes by, you know, that's why I said I wish we did have 200 million years. But
have you been in Colorado? Have you seen how a slice of a million years is about this big? It's like between your thumb and your finger.
Yeah, my.
Yeah.
So our little planet Earth is, you know, in... Also, being a super ecologist, I know people have problems with the weather. Sometimes it changes very quick on them, Lamisha. Sometimes it rains, sometimes it snows, sometimes it hails, sometimes there's monsoons, typhoons, tornadoes, earthquakes. People must understand all weather is for the planet Earth.
And we have to stop feeling that we are so much above the animal kingdom.
Correct.
I read something fascinating this week. You know that little chill that you have in the back of your neck when you don't know it, but somebody is looking at you?
Yes.
And you turn around and you can feel that glance on your neck?
Yes.
It's something that is billions of years old. It's called the reptilian reflex.
Yeah.
Where your skin crawls. Mm-hmm. It's way before we were mammals.
Yes.
It's not even getting upset when we think that we're a different race of monkeys. That goes way back, right after the dinosaurs.
Yes.
Before we were mammals. The reptilian reflex. And that's how window... That window is also small. That's only like 2 billion years.
Yes, very small.
It's amazing.
Yeah, no, amazing. And that's because we know this universe is so profoundly large. And if we could just learn how to figure out our little piece of this cha-cha, you know, we could start to, you know, do what humans are supposed to do. That's just enjoy life, enjoy each other.
Orale.
And be as wonderful as we can to ourselves and to each other. Because politics aren't who you vote for. Politics aren't what church you go to. Politics are how you treat people, how you treat yourself.
Hey, man, what do you do to be wonderful to yourself, I wonder? And we're getting personal here.
I live in dimensional rapture.
Hey, what's that?
Everything is emotional bliss because everything is a learned experience and exercise in life. And I know this, and I've known this from being introduced to gorillaisms from the George Jackson Foundation. Mm. You know, we stay on top of things. We will always succeed in fulfilling that element of rapture, emotional bliss. Mm. I call it natural emotional bliss because it's a joy of even making mistakes. Because
even crisis, right?
Correct.
Crisis is danger and opportunity.
And then the same thing, it's like in figuring things out so that my gift, my contribution to this madness is to make whatever job I have easier for the next person.
Hey, man, before we get off the air, I want to hear Grandma Got a Shotgun again.
Grandmama please, got a shotgun.
Please, please, pretty please. Favorcito, papi. Here we go.
This is from San Francisco, California, Enemy Combatant Radio. This is Lamisha in the San Francisco Village Voice. And being a writer and a poet, it's important for all people to be able to externalize their own feelings, their own insights, so that we can have a better idea of who they are, we are, and what all of us can contribute to our cha-cha here. This is all our trip. We all have to take responsibility for it. We've had a lot of messages, a lot of things we read between the lines, and the most important thing is we all have to stand up.
Simon.
We all have to stand up. And I had the most wonderful privilege of throwing this poem together. I love throwing poetry together because it writes itself. And this is for all the grandmamas of Bayview Hunters Point and all the grandmamas who want to stand up, speak up, and put their foot down. Grandmama's got a shotgun. She's walking down the street. Grandmama's got a shotgun. She's taking back the street. Grandmama's got a shotgun. She ain't taking no shit. Grandmama's got a shotgun. She's tired of her once beautiful Bayview Hunters Point being treated. Being treated like last year's trash. Grandmama's got a shotgun. She's taking the streets. And don't you know? I heard her say, in the Bayview Hunters Point, the law's corrupt. The law's corrupt. The law is corrupt. And I'll tell you, my mama's got a shotgun. She's putting the heat, the pretentious law, putting it all in its place. My grandmama's, she's jump-starting the revolution. She's taking back the streets. She put the law in its place. It's grandmama just this time. Grandmama's got a shotgun. All I could say is, watch out. She's taking it to the streets.
Yeah!
Grandmama's got a shotgun. She's reclaiming the streets.
Yep.
One last word from Lamisha.
I don't know. I'm still blown away by that poem, man. Because, you know, I'm not a grandma. Unfortunately, my son didn't get a chance to have children.
Sadness, yes.
But in a way, people call me auntie and grandma all over Bayview. And there's a lot of love. Not, you know, love is there to just be to one person. But I love all my kids and my heroes in Bayview.
And just so as a small disclaimer, a shotgun could come in many different forms. It could be a musical instrument. It could be
That's
a pen.
Right.
It could be your sharp tongue. It could be your mm-hmm. sharp mind. It could be your sharp heart. Mm-hmm. Stand up and speak and fight with whatever you can, because grandmama's got a shotgun.
Word.
She's taking back the streets.
All right.
From San Francisco, California, this is Enemy Combatant Radio, San Francisco Village Voice with Lamisha.
Later. Peace.
I was 17. I ran away from home and from everything I had ever known.
I was sick and tired living in a town filled with narrow minds and hate.
They used to laugh at me. Their children called me names. I would run and hide, feeling so ashamed
just for being born. I was just a boy, punished for a crime that was